Arnitam etadva punyam parikshitam maya vasudeva kathopetam akhyanam yada prichita. Sages, as you did ask me, now I have described almost everything regarding the narrations about Lord Krishna in connection with the history of the pious Maharaj Parikshit. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam is the history of the activities of the Lord, and the activities of the Lord are performed in relation with the devotees of the Lord. Therefore, the history of the devotees is not different from the history of Lord Krishna's activities. A devotee of the Lord regards both the activities of the Lord and those of his pure devotees on an equal level, for they are all transcendental. For the purification of themselves, as well as the atmosphere of the entire world, who are very eager to hear the transcendental narration of the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as they are performed in relation to his devotees. Srila Prabhupada was not very fond of any pictures of Krishna, or for that matter, any of the manifestations of Krishna. When the artist portrayed them standing alone, sometimes we see just Krishna. Prabhupada said, "Where is Krishna ever alone? He is always accompanied by his associates, either Sri Radharani, or Sri Balaramji, or Gopis, or Gopas, Yashoda, Nanda Maharaj, or sometimes devotees like his cows, or his deer, or his parrots, peacocks, monkeys, swans. Krishna is always with his entourage of devotees, because he is Rasikananda. He is always enjoying the bliss of loving relationships. And bhaktas understand that this is Krishna's eternal pleasure, giving pleasures to his devotees and receiving the love of his devotees. This is the subject matter of all the Vedic literatures. The Mahabharata is about Krishna. Therefore it is sacred. It is a scripture that we worship. But the large volume of information is especially describing the pastimes of the Pandavas and their forefathers, Maharaj Santanu. But their relationship with Krishna is the ultimate subject of Mahabharata. Similarly, in Srimad Bhagavat, so many wonderful stories are spoken by Sri Shukadeva Goswami. And until we come to the 10th canto, we find that in each one of those stories, the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears but the center of attention is usually the devotee. Dhruva Maharaj, the Lord appeared as Krishnigarbha, the beautiful forearm form of Narayan. Because Dhruva Maharaj surrendered to Lord Vishnu, because he received such loving benedictions and ultimately surrendered with unmotivated loving service, the story of Dhruva Maharaj is completely sacred. And Shukadeva Goswami even gives the benediction that anyone who sincerely hears this story, especially at particular auspicious times, is granted great, great spiritual merit. The story of Dhruva brings us to understand his life, the great tragedies he underwent, the reactions that awakened in his heart, the great austerities he performed, his relationship with his Guru Maharaj, Sri Narada Muni. And then there's some verses about his darshan with Krishna. And then it goes on to explain him as the king, all the wonderful, wonderful things he did for his citizens, the incredible power he had to destroy the Yakshas. But the conclusion, it always came back to his loving sentiments of devotion to Krishna, his aspiration for Krishna consciousness. And similarly, we find all the stories of Bhagavatam. Maharaj Prachini Barhishat, he was actually a very materialistic person. And there are so many chapters describing his materialistic ways. And Sri Narada Muni is preaching to him, indirectly preaching to him. Because kings, people in big, big positions, are often very difficult to preach to. Because they think they know so much. It's hard to preach to someone who thinks they know. Therefore, it is said in Bhagavat by Queen Kunti, Janmaishwaraya Suti Sidhir Edamana Madhapama, that those who are too proud due to high education, high birth, physical beauty, and great wealth, it is very difficult to preach to such people. And even if you do, it's very difficult to penetrate their hearts or inspire them to actually take shelter of the message of Godhead or the name of the Supreme Lord. So Sri Narada Muni indirectly told a story of a king named Puranjan and went through his whole life cycle, which is quite amazing. And by the time he came to the conclusion, Puranjan was so much attached to the pleasures of this world that he had to take another birth in a very undesirable situation. And Prachini Barhishat Maharaj realized, after days of discussing this story of Puranjan with Sri Narada Rishi, that Puranjan is me. I have been in rapt attention learning the lessons that have been being taught through this Puranjan. But now I know that you're talking about me. You just changed the name. And Narada Muni said, yes, correct. But by the time he came to that understanding, he already had transformed his heart. And what was the conclusion? That he surrendered to Krishna. So all of these stories are glorious, although they give so much information about these particular individuals, because in the end they surrender to Krishna, or because they are about the glorious activities of their devotion to Krishna, they are non-different than the topics of Krishna directly. the story of Prahlad Maharaj. Actually, there are so many chapters, entire volumes of writings that Prabhupada wrote from the Srimad Bhagavatam, chapters comprising volumes of information of Prahlad. And just toward the end, Narasimhadeva appears. Actually, the story of Narasimhadeva's actual personal direct appearance is a very small part of the story of Prahlad. He appears, he fights, he kills Hiranyakashipu, he says a few words, and Prahlad's prayers are the rest. And when we sing the beautiful song of Narasimhadeva, it is always in relationship to Prahlad Maharaj. We should know that the Lord loves to glorify himself through his devotee. Bhagavad Gita is simply the story of the beautiful loving relationship between Krishna and Arjuna. Yesterday we celebrated Ram Navami. It is simply the story of Ram with his devotees. Where is Ram alone? He was exiled into the forest to be alone. But Sita could not bear the separation. And Lakshman could not bear the separation. Bharat was sent with Shatrughna to his mother's brother's home, the kingdom of Kekaya. And at that time, it was decided by Dasarath Maharaj that Lord Sri Ramchandra would be coronated as king. And this was just the news that everyone in Ayodhya Dham was longing to hear, because Sri Ramchandra, he loved the citizens so much that naturally the citizens loved him so much. When you love people, people love you. If you're waiting for people to love you, then they will wait for you to love them. That is human nature. And meanwhile, everyone's complaining that nobody loves me. Anyways, the Supreme Lord, his love is perfect and pure. And he was so gentle and compassionately disposed toward all the citizens that they just loved him more than their own lives. Parents loved him more than their own children. Children loved him more than their own parents. Brothers loved him more than their own brothers. They simply loved Ram because he was the perfect well-wisher of everyone. And Dasarath Maharaj, knowing his great virtues, understood that there will be no king like him. He would make the Ikshvaku dynasty famous for the rest of time. So when Dasarath Maharaj announced that Ram would be coronated as king, everyone in Ayodhya was celebrating. And the coronation was to be the next morning during a very auspicious constellation. And Vasishtha Muni and all the sages, they were very happy. They were making all wonderful arrangements. And there was singing and dancing and chanting of the glories of Sri Ram throughout all of Ayodhya. But the demigods, they were not happy about this. They were actually quite upset. Why? Because when they prayed through Lord Brahma and performed that great yajna, they wanted Ram to come and kill Ravana. That was his mission as far as they were concerned. And if he becomes the king of Ayodhya, when will he ever have time to kill Ravana? We have to change this plan somehow or other. So they actually, by their great powers, they entered into the heart of the maidservant of Kaikeyi, the stepmother of Ram. Her name was Mantara. She had hunched back. And Mantara went to Kaikeyi. Kaikeyi was celebrating, because actually Kaikeyi loved Ram as much or more than her own son, Bharat. And she said that, why you are so happy? Kaikeyi said, this is the happiest thing that's ever happened to our kingdom of Ayodhya. Ram will be coronated as king. You do not know what this will mean. Ram is a very evil person. When someone like this gets power, what he will do, because he knows that Bharat is better than him. And he will feel threatened, and he will banish your son and you to the forest. He may even kill your son. Kaikeyi did not believe, but Mantara was very, very determined to convince her. And although Kaikeyi was actually a very, very wonderful devotee of the Lord, because of this evil association, she became completely envious and vicious, like a serpent. Ramayana describes in this way to show us the power of association. Even if you are a very, very great personality, if you associate with people who are materialistic and envious, then it can spoil your whole consciousness and even turn you against God. There are so many examples of this. Bhomasura. Before his name was Bhomasura, his name was Bhoma, because he was born of the earth. He was the son of the Lord in the form of Varahadeva. But when he associated with Banasura, that association corrupted him and he became a demon and an enemy of his own father, who happened to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And ultimately Krishna killed him because he was offending Vaishnavas. And we have the story of Jagai and Madhai. Originally, their name were Madhavananda and Jagananda. They were Brahmins. And they were coming from a family of very pure-hearted Brahmins who did everything, who were very kind and very charitable and very clean, very pious, religious, in every single way. But when they were very young, they associated with materialistic people who were drinking liquor and using bad words, and gradually, just by that association, they became so corrupt that they were no longer Madhavananda and Jagananda. They became Jagai and Madhai. And their only business was drinking the blood of animals, eating their flesh, drinking strong wines, burning people's houses down, beating people, killing people. All their words were terribly, terribly obscene. It was painful to see them, to hear them, simply by association. But just a few minutes association with Lord Nityananda Prabhu, and they became pure, unalloyed Vaishnavas. This is the power. Asat sangatyaga vaishnavachar. Mahaprabhu said, you want to be Vaishnava, associate with Vaishnavas. Do not associate with people too much attached to sex life and who are not devotees, sense gratification. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Niskinchanasya bhagavaba janomukasya paramparam jagamasura bhavasagarasya. If you want to cross over the ocean of birth and death, then you must know that associating with people too much attached to sense gratification is more deadly than drinking poison willingly. So here is a powerful example. Kaikeyi was so dear to Ram, and Ram was so dear to her. It is explained that Ramchandra offered as much love and respect to Kaikeyi as he did his own mother, Kausalya. Such an intimate relationship. Love of Krishna is within all of our hearts. The tendency to serve Krishna, to please Krishna, is within us all. It is our nature. It is our pleasure. But due to association with the material modes of nature and representatives of those modes, look at what has happened. We have become envious of Krishna. We have all exiled Krishna from the kingdom of our hearts because we want to enjoy his throne. We are all like Kaikeyis. Is it not true? As far as our consciousness goes, we've exiled Krishna from our consciousness. We don't think about him. We don't talk about him. This is the condition of people in material society. Krishna is meant to be sitting on the throne in everyone's heart. He is Paramatma. But we have exiled him from our consciousness. So we don't have to see him, for we don't have to talk to him. We don't have to talk about him. And what is the reason? Because we want to sit on that throne. We want to be the enjoyer. We want to be the person that is glorified, not Krishna. There's no room for two people on that throne. So due to bad association like Kaikeyi, we have all exiled Krishna. Sri Ram. Anyways, Mantara convinced her. And then Kaikeyi began to think, Mantara is my best friend, my well-wisher. And this is the way things go in material society. People who are ruining our lives, we think that they are our best well-wishers. And the devotees who are actually trying to help us and save us, we start thinking that there is some ill motivation. This is the way people in society think. They consider the devotees to be threats. But those who are telling them that yes, you are the enjoyer, they are well-wishers. So anyways, by Mantara's persuasion, Kaikeyi called Dasarath into the room. Dasarath wanted to announce the good news. Kaikeyi was laying on the ground, her hair scattered. She was in such a depressed condition. In this way, she softened Dasarath's heart. This is the way Maya works when she wants to work through someone. She knows just how to just go right to your weakest point. Dasarath was compassionate, and he loved his wives. So she knew exactly how to just set him up in such a way to get her way. When he saw her like that, his heart just became so open to do anything to help her. He said, "What can I do for you?" She said, "Do you remember when I helped you on the battlefield? You promised me 2 benedictions, and I said later." He said, "Of course, of course. I hate to see you like this. You look so unhappy. Why you're laying on the floor and not in your bed? Why you're wearing these old clothes and not your beautiful garments? I'll do anything for you. I must make you happy. She said, you promise me, you give me your vow that you will give me those two benedictions that you promised then. Of course I will, definitely. Ah, she got them. That's the way Maya gets you. She goes right to your weakest point. She knows thoroughly exactly how to find the most vulnerable situation within and without, and then try to somehow or other take you away from Krishna. Or Krishna take Krishna away from you. Yes, I promise, anything. What are your two benedictions you want? Banish Ram to the forest for 14 years and make Bharat, my son, the king. Do it without hesitation. If you go back on your word, your whole dynasty will be destroyed. This is the power of the word of a person in an honorable society. Kshatriyas today, look at these politicians in their campaign speeches. They all lie, as far as I can understand. Nobody believes politicians anymore. Does anyone believe them? Whatever they say, they're thinking, why is he saying this and what's the truth? Everywhere in the world. There's always so many, every big politician, there's so many scandals about them. And they never say, yes, I did it. They always say, no, no, some other people are trying to get me in for this and for this, and they're trying to spread scandals about others, and everybody's trying to spread scandals, and there's so much dirt flying in everyone's faces. And nobody will ever admit anything. And when they run for office, they make so many promises. They vow to the citizens, the taxes will be less. And then when they, 4 years later, the taxes are more. And when the citizens say, you promised, he said, well, what can I do? Well, you promised if you can't do. So what is the Kshatriya today? There are no Kshatriyas. The greatest virtue of a Kshatriya is his honor, that when he speaks, he will die before he will go back on his word. And that is why citizens within the society were actually happy, because they trusted their leaders. And the leaders were guiding them in God consciousness. So when a Kshatriya gives his word, that word has tremendous power. So Dasarath fell down, unconscious. He couldn't believe what was being said. And Ram, who stayed that night in the temple of Vishnu, doing pujas and everything to purify the atmosphere for his coronation the next day, he came looking for his father. When he went into Kaikeyi's chambers, he saw his father laying there. His father was speechless. And Kaikeyi ultimately said that your father cannot talk because he has just given his vow that you will be banished to the forest for 14 years and my son Bharat will be enthroned as king. So Ram, who is the reservoir of all opulences, manifested the supreme opulence of renunciation, Vairagya. He said, oh, that's what my father wants, then I will go on this very day. He didn't have the slightest hesitation. And Dasarath was saying, no, no, please do not go. I will go instead. Let my word and my honor and everything be finished, but I cannot live without you. But Ram said, no, Father, I must protect your honor. It is my duty. I will go today. So then he went. Lakshman was there. Lakshman was very angry. He was ready to kill Kaikeyi and kill Dasarath and kill anyone else. But Ram somehow or other told him, do not do anything. And ultimately he was surrendered to Ram. So Sita was she was so happy, just jumping. She was just a very young girl. Ram was only 17 at the time, so she was much younger. And she was just so happy making preparations for the coronation of her husband. And Ram came in, told Sita. She said, why you look so sad? He said, because I have been banished from the forest for 14 years. She was shocked. He told her the story. And Sita said to Ram that you must take me with you. Ram said, how can I take you? You have never seen an inconvenience in your whole life. In the forest, there are so many dangerous animals ready to eat people. There are all sorts of robbers and dacoits living. There are mosquitoes biting. There is no proper food, only roots and herbs. There is no nice houses. You'll have to walk barefoot, dressed in tree bark, sleeping on the ground. How can you live like this, Sita? You should stay here in the palace. I'll be back in only 14 years. You take care of my mother and father. But Sita was not concerned with convenience or inconvenience. She was only concerned with serving Ram. She said, if I am in the forest with you, that forest will be more pleasing than heaven. But to be even in this beautiful city of Ayodhya without you, it will be more painful than hell. She said, I will walk before you and with my feet I will crush the thorns and the sticks so that they will not harm your feet. But Ram, I have taken the vow to love you and to serve you under any condition, and you must honor this vow. I must go with you. And if you do not allow me to go with you, I will take my life. So Ram, hearing those sweet words of unconditional love, agreed, yes, Sita, you can come. Lakshman, he said, Ram, I've been with you ever since our childhood, earliest years. I never leave your side. I cannot survive without you. So Ram says, yes, Lakshman, you come. And when he told Mother Kausalya, she was also very happily making nice arrangements. And Ram told her that I've been banished by Kaikeyi for 14 years. Kausalya began, she was shocked. She was weeping. This cannot be true. Lakshman became so... When he saw Kausalya's reaction, Lakshman said, I will kill Kaikeyi, I will kill Dasarath, I will kill all these people because you are meant to be king. And Kausalya, she very much agreed with Lakshman. She said, why you're listening to Kaikeyi? She's not your mother. I'm your mother. I'm telling you, you have to stay here and be the king of Ayodhya. Kaikeyi's telling you to go. You have no responsibility to follow anything she says because I am your real mother. You must stay. She was desperately trying to convince him. But Ram said, no, I am going. I must maintain and preserve the honor and the word of my father. And ultimately, when Kausalya saw his resolve, somehow controlled her tears and tried to give him strength, and encouraged him, glorified him for his virtue. Anyways, the whole kingdom of Ayodhya was terribly, terribly plunged in an ocean of unlimited grief. And when it actually came time for him to leave, he went to say goodbye to his father, his mothers, Vasishtha Muni, and all the great sages were there. And then Kaikeyi came in with tree barks and said to Ram, Lakshman, and Sita, "You cannot put these on. This is your clothes for the next 14 years." And Lord Sri Ramchandra took off his beautiful, beautiful jewelry and silken garments and put on this rough, coarse tree bark around his body. And then Lakshman, he took off all his costly robes and put on a tree bark. And then Sita looked at this tree bark in her innocence, childlike innocence and purity. She was wondering, she was bewildered. How do I put it on? And she started trying to put it on, but she had no idea what to do. She never put on tree bark before. And as she was trying to put it on, everyone in the assembly house, all the wives of Dasarath, all the ministers, they all began to weep seeing her in this situation. But then Ram himself began to try to put this tree bark cloth on Sita. Not cloth, wood. And as he was putting it on, Dasarath just fell unconscious. Just couldn't bear to see this. It is one thing to see Ram going to the forest, but Sita? And people just began to wail and cry and fall to the ground to see Sita in this situation. But Ram just kept trying to fasten it. Vasishtha Muni, at this point, he couldn't control himself any longer. He started cursing Kaikeyi. "Change your mind now. It's not too late. Let Ram stay. Look at what you're doing. Have you no mercy even on Sita? You want to put her in the tree bark and send her to the forest? How cruel-hearted. How evil you have become. You have become so evil that even your own son Bharat, who loves Ram more than his life, he will reject you when he hears what you have done to Ram and Sita." Vasishtha Muni was in tears. This was the ultimate that just utterly crippled the hearts of all the citizens of Ayodhya. To see Ram struggling so hard to put the tree bark on the gentle and tender-limbed goddess of fortune, Sita. And finally it was done. And the chariot was brought. And all the citizens of Ayodhya just started following behind Ram. They decided that we will make the Dandakaranya forest into a kingdom like Ayodhya, and we'll let Kaikeyi and Bharat live in Ayodhya, which will be more deserted than the forest. Anyways, by Ram's persuasion, he tried to somehow or other keep them back, but they wouldn't stay back. Everyone just followed behind him, the trail of tears flowing everywhere. And finally they came to the bank of a river, And Ram said that we will rest here, and all the citizens of Ayodhya, they all took rest, and Ram and Sita took rest, and Lakshman was up guarding, and very, very early in the morning, Ram got up, and he said to Lakshman and Sita, and the chariot driver Sumantra, that let us go now, before anyone wakes up, because it will be too painful for them to ever allow us to leave. So Ramchandra and the others, they went in the chariot in all different directions so nobody could follow properly. And then ultimately they crossed the river. And when the citizens of Ayodhya woke up, they were just desperately looking here, there, everywhere, looking for some clue. But Ram was gone. So with broken hearts and eyes flooded with tears, no one even able to say a word except the name of Ram, they all returned to Ayodhya. And when Bharat, anyways, it's a long story, and it's time to end class. But we find in all of these wonderful pastimes of the Lord, the ecstasy and the intimacy of the devotee's love, and how the Lord reciprocates with that love. This is the ultimate knowledge. The essence of life is bhakti, devotional service to the Supreme Personality of God. Therefore, knowledge, tapasya, charitable activities, karma khanda, jnana khanda, stanga khanda, any yoga, any religion that does not culminate in pure bhakti has missed the real understanding of what is life, what is spiritual life. And therefore, Srila Rupa Goswami prays, Anyabhilashita sunyam jnana karmanya navrita anukulina krishnanu shilanam bhaktaruta. That bhakti should be unmixed with any other motivation, because the goal of life is simply to understand that Krishna is never alone, that God is always surrounded by His loving associates, and that the ultimate destination of the soul is to re-enter again into that loving association with the Lord. And those topics which describe the love between the Lord and His devotees are the highest topics. We are not concerned with Brahma, Satyam, Jagan, Mitya. We are not concerned with the impersonal Brahman, because there is no lila in the impersonal Brahman. There is no pleasure for Krishna there, there is no pleasure for the Jivatma there. No real pleasure. We are only concerned with that loving exchange, and with those activities that help to awaken realization of that loving exchange within our hearts. And this is what the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya is trying to give the world. This is what Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, Srila Prabhupada and other great acharyas fought so hard to establish, that Harikatha, or here Vasudeva Katha, it is explained, is the point that we want to keep our consciousness eternally fixed in, hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord and His devotees. So this story that we are reading, Sutta Goswami is narrating how Maharaj Parikshit, being such a great, great devotee of the Lord, performed so many wonderful, wonderful activities in his birth and ultimately in his death. He was always Krishna conscious. Therefore, by hearing the Leela of Maharaj Parikshit, we are hearing the Leela of Krishna. By glorifying Krishna's devotees, we are glorifying Krishna.
Well,
just we hear that these different stories and leelas, there's so many different aspects of why things are happening the way they're happening. So in this particular story, there's also one part where Dasarath was hunting many, many years ago, and he accidentally killed a young boy who was very much, their parents were very much dependent on him. So this also is explained as some connection between him having to banish Ram to the forest. So how does these different reasons interplay in the whole picture?
How do they all play in the same picture?
Yeah, they
play under Krishna's direction. Mm-hmm. Dasarath was a great Maharathi. He was such a warrior, Dasarath, that he didn't even have to see his target. Just by hearing, he could shoot his arrow to where the sound was coming from and hit it. Can anyone do that today? So he was hunting and he heard some water and he was thinking that it was an elephant drinking water, so he shot his arrow? Huh? What is he saying? What? Yeah, it's the name. So he shot his arrow and it wasn't an elephant. It was a little Brahmin boy who was bringing water for his blind mother and father. So the arrow was in his body and it was so painful, he told Dasarath, take this arrow out. He said, but because you have killed me, you should at least go to my blind mother and father and tell them what you have done, because otherwise they'll be waiting for me. So he took the arrow out and the son died. And he went back to the mother and father and told them what had happened. And they couldn't live without their son, so they made a funeral pyre. And before going into the funeral pyre, they said to Dasarath that as we are dying, as we are going to die due to separation from our son, you will also. And then they died. So after Ram was banished to the forest, Dasarath actually was telling the story to Kausalya. So just before Dasarath left his body, he said, this is my destiny. So you're asking how it all comes together? It comes together by Krishna's arrangement.
Kaikeyi is not actually, he's actually fulfilling the destiny.
Huh?
Kaikeyi is actually fulfilling his destiny in one sense.
Actually, so many things working together in the Lord's Leela. The demigods were very happy when Ram was exiled to the forest, because they knew that now Ravana will be killed. In fact, when Sita was stolen by Ravana, the demigods were even more ecstatic, because they knew the end is coming very near. Yes? Who says that? That even the father of the Supreme Personality of Godhead could not escape karma. Then why he went back to Vaikuntha? It's clearly said there that he goes back to the spiritual world, Vaikuntha. Is there karma in Vaikuntha? He escaped karma forever. Because these people, they don't have guru. Tad vijnanartham sugurum eva avigachet tasmat gurum prabhadyeta jigyasu sreyutamam. Without guru, you cannot understand scripture. Everyone misunderstands, misinterprets the scriptures, unless they have a spiritual master in disciplic succession who can give them the proper understanding. Look at Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is just teachings. There's not even hardly a lila to understand. It's just straightforward teachings. Krishna saying, always think of me, surrender to me. Bhagavad Gita is clear as the sun and at noon. There's no question. But yet, practically every Bhagavad Gita today doesn't even mention that Krishna is God. Prabhupada was amazed when he came to America. There were so many Gitas. For over 200 years, people were reading English translations of Gitas. And nobody even knew that Krishna was a subject matter in the Gita. Why? Evam parampara praptam bhakto sime shaka cheti rahasi. Unless you're a bhakta, you cannot understand. So, people read Ramayana, and even these great, great, big, big reciters of Ramayana, some of them recite hundreds and hundreds and thousands of times in their life, they're reciting the entire Ramayana. And they recite sometimes to thousands of people, and they cry and they when they're singing the story of Ramayana. And they're scrutinizing every little aspect of the Ramayana, philosophically and in so many ways. But their conclusion is they don't even know whether Ram is even... What is Ram? He's a temporary manifestation of Brahman. And some of them, their ultimate conclusion of Ramayana is that you should do what your father tells you to do. Sarva-dharman puritya-ja, mamekam sharanam braja. Krishna says, abandon all varieties of religion, just surrender to me. And these big, big reciters of Ramayana, they will say, well, Krishna might say, abandon all varieties of religion and surrender to him, but not if your father tells you something different, because Ram followed his father. So there are so many different conceptions. But unless you have a guru in proper disciplic succession, you cannot understand any scripture. And this particular misinterpretation, the Dasarat, because he killed his Brahmin son, that he had to die of a karmic reaction, even though Ram was his own son. This is what you're saying? They are interpreting? But the Vaishnavas understand that this is a lila. This is a lila of the Lord, which is transcendental to karma and transcendental to the modes of material nature. But at the same time, certain incidences may take place to justify the particular result by material calculations. But it is all being supervised by the Supreme Personality of Godhead directly. Therefore, it is not under the laws of karma. Just like when Srila Prabhupada was a little child, we saw in the play, Krishna Chandra was the astrologer. Priyavrat was Prabhupada, right? And who was Prabhupada's mother? Father. Anyways, the astrologer came and said that this son of yours, he will make the whole world God conscious. He will build a house the whole world could live in, right? He will open so many temples, so many things. So you may say that yes, this was his karma. The astrologer forecasted his karma. Well, what does that have to do with it? It was Krishna's arrangement, and Krishna could reveal it through the karmic condition of an astrologer too, his readings. So similarly, Krishna arranged within Dasarath's heart to kill this little boy just to make his pastimes to prepare it to be very, very exciting, to justify everything in a very wonderful way. After all, Maharaj Parikshit. He was beyond thirst. But just so he would be cursed to die, Krishna made him thirsty. Huh? It was not a mistake. It's daivi, daivi prakriti, Krishna's divine energy. So no one can be the father of the Supreme Lord Ram unless he is completely being supervised by the Lord's Leela. And anyone who sees any of these activities as karma is simply in an illusion. Does that answer your question? So you should tell these people that they should accept a proper spiritual master and hear submissively and stop speculating. We read in our scriptures of how Srila Prabhupada and all the acharyas of our sampradaya condemn mental speculation. And sometimes we think, why they're always talking about against speculation? This is why. Because it's such a terrible disease, trying to understand God or the scriptures through our own intelligence is nothing but speculation. We must hear submissively.